Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Booker T. Washington Speaks, an African American Family Forum. a discussion among African Americans and others that would like to participate that are not African Americans, but a discussion in a family room setting, an internet family room session, or a telephone family room session, a discussion about issues that pertain to African American people and how we can progress in this challenging time in which we are living. This is not the first time that we've had serious challenges to our progress, but it is certainly current, and it is certainly critical that we find ways to deal with and surpass the challenges that we're faced with. And one of the challenges that we're faced with is the survival of our historically black colleges. I am Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, who established the Tuskegee Institute, a famous historically black college located in Alabama. I also attended Alabama A&M University, and I spent a lot of time on the campuses of Morehouse College, Clark Atlanta University, Spelman College, and also Morris Brown College in Atlanta, Georgia. And so I'm very familiar with the historically black college world. However, I teach at a predominantly white college in Augusta, Georgia, Augusta University. And I also attended the University of California at Berkeley, a predominantly white college, at least it was when I was there in the 60s. And I have visited other college campuses that were predominantly non-African-American throughout the years. So we have chosen for tonight's topic, is it time for historically black colleges to integrate with predominantly white colleges? Is it time for historically black colleges to integrate with predominantly white colleges? If not, why not? And is not full integration what we wanted? Is not full integration what we wanted? I want to welcome our co-host, Brother Dr. Haleem Mustafa, you certainly may have some thoughts on this particular topic. So, first of all, if you'd like to introduce yourself by giving a little more of your background and projects that you're working on as a way of introduction, you can go right ahead and do that. And then afterwards, if you would like to address the topic, I'll just repeat the question one more time. Is it time for historically black colleges to integrate with predominantly white colleges? If not, why not? And is not full integration what we wanted? So, Brother Dr. Haleem Mustafa, welcome.
Yes, welcome. Thank you very much, Professor, and to the audience out there in the global internet marketplace. This is a very, very important topic for in terms of where we're going as a people. Now, as you suggest, I'm going to give a little summary of my background. I was born into a family in East Palo Alto, California, and not a very family of a lot of prosperity and wealth, but a common family with my grandmother and grandfather raised me. My mother had me at 15 years old. And she was kind of fancy free and really pretty, and so she wasn't responsive enough. So my grandmother took me and raised me, and so I appreciate that. Now I went on to high school, and I ended up being a very good athlete from little league all the way up to high school. And an opportunity came as I graduated high school to play professional baseball, which I did take as an opportunity. And I was hoping that it would be something that would lead me to taking my family off poverty. However, the circumstances that I planned, I'm going to say this like this, God had another plan for my life. And even though that was my dream to do and be the superstar athlete. And so in any event, as I had expected the next season to go back and be a really superstar and outperform a lot of these other players on the team who were certainly not African-American. They were mostly Caucasian, and they were localized in terms of the Minnesota Twins organization where they actually wanted more white and black, and that's just the fact. And in any event, I had intention to come back and do a superstar year second year, but they gave me a release letter. A release letter caused me to get a little angry, and I engaged myself in the ideas of community development and the ideas of youth development and the ideas of making myself as useful as I could to the community. I just felt the urgent need to do so. And in my town, I won't go into a lot of detail about it, but the town actually was historically a town that had a sister city relation with Nairobi, Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya, in Africa. And so our city, East Palo Alto, was a sister city named Nairobi. So that's another historical piece that really has gone away, unfortunately, due to a lack of focus of the predominantly PhDs we had in that city, who were African American, black, and also the ideas of utilized as puppets or pawns for the outside foundations who utilized their expertise to pull the community together. And right in front of us, they usurped and took the community back. And right now, it is going through a total gentrification in a very, very unbalanced way, which mostly I think that all gentrifications are unbalanced anyway. When you take away a community from a people and then give it to some other people, and the people who have been there can't afford to live anywhere else. So that's a really perplexing problem that we have to address at some point. So in any event, as I got out of my efforts in community development, I happened to run upon some information that tied to Tuskegee University. It was a federal holiday that was given to Dr. George Washington Carver. And this federal holiday, nobody at Tuskegee knew about it, not the president of the university, nor the directors of the Carver Museum. And so I engaged them in what I had discovered with the help of one of my advisors, Dr. Fatima Ali. Ann Redden's her formal name, birth name. And historically, she was the first African-American woman PhD faculty at Purdue University. So anyway, she's a mentor to me, and she's no longer here, so she's passed. But she had informed me of Dr. Doris Watson Carver through two encyclopedias, World Book and Collier. So she gave me a single page of each of them, and I read it, and I found something really perplexing. So it said that this federal holiday, known as Public Law 290, it passed on in 1945, about 2 years after Dr. Carver's demise on Friday, January 5, 1943. So Dr. Carver died in 43. The federal law was passed in 45. And by the 79th U.S. Congress, and President Harry S. Truman signed off on it, which mandated that this day of January 5 be in perpetuity a day in which all federal buildings would fly flags half-staff. Now, that alone really told me something in terms of this was powerful, powerful thing that Dr. Carver must have done. And so I became an expert on Dr. Carver in a lot of areas. And I come to find out that Dr. Carver had came to Tuskegee under certain unusual circumstances whereby Dr. Booker T. Washington sent him a letter and most famously asked Dr. Carver to come to help Tuskegee, the black people there who were just kind of transitioning out of slavery and certainly some of the things that still were occurring, the quality of life that one would normally do. But Dr. Booker T. Washington asked Dr. Carver to assist him in bringing this quality of living to the those people who are transitioning to figure out how to make some a living now, and just to more than just exist, but how to prosper and thrive. So Dr. Carver read the letter, and he took it to the president of Ames, Iowa, and he made an inquiry to get his advice for this letter. Now, the gentleman, the president of the University of Ames, Iowa, said, in summation, he says, we here at Ames, Iowa, offer you fortune and fame. He said, but what Dr. Booker T. Washington offers you is immortality. Immortality. Now, I found that kind of interesting because I know the immortality is certainly like, okay, if you say President George Washington, and he's in immortality status in America's history and American future history of young people learning about this country. And so Dr. Carver, as I was mentioning, that the president of Ames, Iowa, said that he would fortune and fame could be offered by the university, but immortality from the work that Dr. Carver would do with Dr. Booker T. Washington in assisting black people specifically to learn how to, you know, thrive, strive, and do for self. So under that idea, Dr. Carver went there and stayed his whole life there. And even some years after Dr. Booker T. Washington passed. Now, the unique thing that I found out, I kind of made a connection on, is that the idea for immortality is really tied to that federal holiday that I mentioned earlier. So I certainly made efforts with a team of people. We formed a program organization called the Healing Institute for Jobs, Recovery, Academics, and Housing. And in all purposes, that was set up as a community development corporation. Now, under the ideas of the different components, it focuses on the idea of healing and those aspects of what healing is in terms of community development and youth development and community and economics, all the healing aspects. Healing Institute, of course, that's just the idea of having some formal agency entity that would be there for a long-term basis. Jobs, you know, that's jobs are certainly income-based, but now in America, jobs is outdated. It has to be career pathways. So young people today are pursuing jobs, 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 and jobs are like slave wages, and we have to get young people into the idea of career pathways and the idea of earning unlimited potential based on their academic aptitude, the training and exposure, and whether industrial trades or whatever the circumstance is, and the pride from achievement and accomplishments. And all that is part of what we need to do. We have done it before, and we need to do it again because as we move to the future, our lights are getting kind of dim right now. As you look at the HBCU colleges and the fall off of enrollment and the lack of serious pride, from my perspective, of the students. Now, Professor, I'm going a little long with it here. Should I kind of shut down a little bit here, or is it okay?
Well, you really, actually, we just had one of our other regular program participants come on, and she may want to have you repeat some of what you said, not necessarily your background. She may be somewhat familiar with that because she's been on the show before, but in terms of your views on the topic, if you want to repeat your views on the topic, and then we'll ask you if she'd like to come. Because let me repeat the topic again. You can then give us your views again. The topic is it time for historically black colleges to integrate with predominantly white colleges? If not, why not? And is not full integration what we wanted? If you would like to, you know, summarize what you said and give a commentary on that, and then our other guests that just came on may want to respond to that.
Yes, Professor. Okay. I guess the latter question, latter part of that is that is full integration what we wanted. Now, I believe that our idea was to be independent. I'm looking at it from the perspective of your great-grandfather, correct me if I'm wrong. The idea was to be a great provider of services that would income generate and make us independent pathways for the idea of permanent wealth building and community development for our own selves, as you would say, do for self. Now, in terms of is it time for HBCU colleges to integrate with white colleges, which are, you know, majority, I would say no, in my own personal opinion now, because we have not yet demonstrated our full capacity in developing our own in the ways that has been demonstrated in the past. And I use your great-grandfather as one example, but there's certainly other examples as well. But the point is that until our black or African-centered professors and staff and faculty engage in an enthusiastic way to share knowledge with the young people instead of themselves want to party with the young people and just kind of be, you know, a lot of buffoonery behavior in terms of just want to, you know, well, I won't go into detail, but some of the men kind of take the young ladies early in their life to make them their wife or their girlfriend, but they don't really take them to the full level of, you know, marriage and that kind of thing. It becomes a distraction. So I know that we have to model the best in what we know we could do that we have done before that would make the HBCUs the shiny stars of the academic world. Because, you know, listen, we had people way back before the colleges were existing that were still making great accomplishments. So I know the job is not done. And I'm really hoping that the young people today at the colleges will take on a more bigger responsibility for their own future by the ideas of industry developments, you know, utilizing the intelligentsia of the HBCU college network in terms of how we communicate with each other, why, and trust each other to work together as a team. So that's a summary of what I want to say, sir.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, since you were speaking, we had another guest join, so we now have several of us, actually, and so I'm going to invite the other guest to participate. Someone is trying to talk. I don't know who it is trying to talk, but whoever it is, I think I can hear you, but go ahead and speak if you would like to. If there's someone that was trying to get on the air, you have the air. Go ahead. If you were trying to speak, please go ahead. You have the mic. You have the mic. Go ahead, please. Let us hear you. Whoever it is that was trying to speak. Okay, well, let me say this. I didn't get a response to my open invitation for our other guests to speak. So while they're thinking about responding, if they want to respond to you, I do want to say something concerning the topic. Throughout this, where predominantly, not just in the South, of course, we know that there's a historically black college, Lincoln University up in Pennsylvania, and another one, I think, in Missouri, which isn't really South, and certainly Pennsylvania is not South. But we also know that they have the City College of New York, which is predominantly African-American, and Malcolm X College. But in the South is where the historical black colleges actually are located primarily. And one thing that we should understand is that some of these colleges are private colleges. Like Tuskegee is not completely private. It's considered private, but state supported, meaning that it does receive an allocation of funding from the state of Alabama in addition to the private resources that it has. Many of the black colleges, historically black colleges in the South, are state schools. For example, here in Georgia, where I live, we have Albany State, and we have Savannah State, and we have Fort Valley State, all predominantly black colleges that were formed back in the late 1800s, early 1900s for the specific education of black college-age students during the days of segregation when black students could not get into the state schools. Now they can. And we also have a few other colleges that are not historically black colleges. However, they are predominantly black colleges. And what is happening in the state of Georgia is that there's a movement. It's been slowed because of concern for political pushback from the black community, but it's still an ongoing movement to actually integrate these black colleges with the nearby white colleges so that both schools will have a diverse population. In other words, the historically black college campuses will have a larger percentage of white students, and vice versa. The historically white colleges will have a larger percentage of black students. So over a period of time, you may have an even number of white and black students on what used to be a predominantly black college campus. And of course, the administrations, you know, may change so that the predominantly black college may end up having white presidents and provosts, and the predominantly white campuses may have black presidents and provosts, because they'll all be part of one university. It won't be Savannah State anymore. It might be something else. It may take on the name of the nearby white school. So this is what's actually happening. I'm not just, you know, throwing that out there as a hypothetical situation. This is a move that is slowly gaining traction here in the state of Georgia. And it may be happening in other places where you have state schools. In South Carolina, you have South Carolina State University, which is under a tremendous amount of financial strain, and it's very likely that that school may be integrated into nearby white university just to relieve the financial burden on the state of trying to support, you know, two different kinds of budgets. So this is not just a hypothetical question I'm asking. It's something that is right in our face, and so that's the reason why we decided to pick this topic, but we want to hear your thoughts, your opinion. So thank you for your opinion, Dr. Mustafa. And so for our other guests, if you'd like to go ahead and weigh in on that, we'd certainly like to hear your opinion.
Yes, I would. Hi, this is Stephanie Runnels.
Hey,
thank
Stephanie.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you.
I think it's a great topic. I can't say that I don't disagree with the doctor. I can understand where he's coming from, but at the same time, in my own personal opinion, I think that integration and coming together might be a good thing. I think that whatever it takes to give our people the education that they need and the tools, funding for those educations, by whatever means necessary, I think it could be a good thing, rather than to start seeing our colleges shut down. And when I think about segregation, I think about things like when we couldn't drink out of the same water fountain, when there was a black army and a white army. I mean, those were some ugly times, and there once was a time where we had to have it as black colleges because we weren't welcome into the other colleges, but those days are gone, and we need to strive for everything we can get to get ahead and to rise above all of that. So, I think it'll be a good thing, and probably be a necessary thing, too. When I think about my grandchildren who are college age, I don't want nothing holding them back. So, thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate your comments, Stephanie. I appreciate your candor concerning your opinion. I think it's very clear where you stand, and that's really what we want, is for our guests to be free, to feel free, to be very outspoken or clear about the positions that we hold. Would you like to make an additional comment on the basis of what Stephanie said, Brother Dr. Haleem?
Yes, I certainly would. Now, this is a media soundbite. We are going to integrate ourselves right out into non-existence. Now, we know how the system works. This system has a very unique and very subtle way of taking us out of our own lane and putting us on a freeway of where they're going, and we're left behind again. So this is why I believe that we have to take the best of what we have done in the past and make sure that we maintain a level that we can communicate directly on the vibration level, on the intellectual level, on the life experience level, with those that will be comfortable with it coming from a person of the same culture. Now, they have ways in which they do early in life with young people in school, where before they make the integration fully, they actually have the cultural language of the people to be learning this way, and then they transition to a more adult track. What I'm saying, though, since we are so far behind in terms of our HBCUs, in terms of the competitiveness of creating industries and those kind of things that other colleges do, we need to do internal for ourselves until we master our systems, and then we can invite others to come in our system with specific interests for their expertise and so forth, Howard as a medical university. We can look like that and have a specific to various disciplines as the HBCUs unite on a common general plan. And that's just a part of what I'm thinking, but that's it.
Okay.
Yes, I'd like to say something else.
Go right ahead.
Well, he said it himself. Thank you for saying it. We are so far behind. So if we've gotten nowhere and we're so far behind, we get any further behind, we'll be shutting down. So why not try something new? I have a granddaughter. She's going for her PhD and master's right now. She's trying to be a scientific forensic pathologist. She stays on the Dean's Honor Roll list. Long time ago, she wouldn't have been able to be in this type of college doing this type of thing. And if these black colleges don't have everything that they need to keep these students like this going where they can reach their goals, then that's why I say it should be, go ahead and let them integrate together, to give fair opportunities instead of sinking with the school and being hindered in their greatness. So like you said, we're so far behind. We better make some sort of move, don't you think? Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Can I respond, please?
I'm sorry, were you saying something? I don't want to cut anybody off.
I like to respond, but only after, everybody else had a chance to say something. I had a response on that.
Well, go ahead. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, I look at the past, and let's look at Tuskegee as a good example. There was not integration. It was a segregation, and we did much better on our own and without integration. And normally when people get so integrated, they disappear as a cultural significance. And this is what happens when we actually get our young people used to the other side of the freeway being a little bit better than this side of the freeway. Until we ourselves internalize responsibility and everybody lend a hand that has an interest in it, I'm talking about from the top to the bottom, we as a people, cultural group, or a psychological understanding of the what is the dynamics of how do you take a person who has an ethnic culture and you blend them into the point that their blending becomes so unnatural that they're talking and acting and in a way that is kind of strange to their own family. See, I understand intellectual development, but why become so intellectually usurped into another culture that now you are defending those cultures as they are, you know, as you might think that they are the, you know, the people who are more smarter than you because of the skin color. This becomes a situation that's very, very dangerous. But I know a lot of young people go to serve these colleges like that and be isolated and to the point they want to commit suicide because of the peer pressure isolation. They feel themselves dissuaded and this single dot on the big old campus of this white cloud, I'm just using this as an example, and therefore the confidence that normally would be there from having an alliance with people who vibrate on the interest level with the expectation of high achievements. In contrast, the white colleagues don't have that interest in the high achievement until you actually start making the money, and then they'll, you know, sign this kind of contract with you where everything you invent becomes their ownership. So I say no, no, no. That's it for me now.
Okay, well, let me just interject a couple of things. Number one is I want to share something with our audience, you who are on the phone, and also our internet audience. And I'm not taking a position by reading this. I'm just adding another piece to the puzzle. And this, what I'm going to share with you, is from the writings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who is passed on now, but he left with the world community of volumes of ideas concerning the upliftment of the African-American people. And this book that I'm reading from is called Message to the Black Man in America. So you can see his focus was on uplifting the black people in America. And he said this: get knowledge to benefit self. My people should get an education which will benefit their own people, and not an education adding to the storehouse of their teacher. We need education, but an education which removes us from the shackles of slavery and servitude. Yet an education, but not an education which leaves us in an inferior position and without a future. Yet an education, but an education that leaves us, but not an education that leaves us looking to the slave master for a job. I'll just read a couple more paragraphs of this just to get the point across, and then we can share our opinion about it. Then he goes on to say, education for my people should be where our children are off to themselves for the first 15 or 16 years in classes separated by sex. Then they should, or then they could and should seek higher education without the danger of losing respect for self or seeking to lose their identity. No people strive to lose themselves among other people except the so-called American Negroes. This they do because of their lack of knowledge of self. And I'll wrap it up by saying this. He said that we should acquire an education where our people will become better students than their teachers, get an education which will make our people produce jobs for self, and will make our people willing and able to go and do for self? Is this not the goal and aim of the many foreign students who are studying in this country? Will not these students return to their own nation and give their people the benefit of their learning? Did not Nkrumah, and this was the first president of the government of Ghana after it had received its freedom from colonialism back in the early 1960s. Did not Nkrumah return to Ghana? I believe he studied at Howard and some other graduate school in America. But did not Nkrumah return to Ghana to lead his people to independence with the benefit of learning he acquired here in America and elsewhere? And did not Dr. Hastings Banda, who was another one of the presidents of one of the African countries, I can't remember exactly which one, but he studied in America also. Did not Dr. Hastings Banda return to give the benefit of his education? Well, it says where he came from, Nyasa land. He not returned to give the benefit of his education to his people who were striving toward freedom and independence in Nyasa land? And did not Nnamdi Azikiwe of Nigeria give the benefit of his education to the upliftment and independence of his people? And does not America offer exchange scholarships to smaller, weaker, and independent foreign governments so that their students will acquire knowledge to aid the people of their countries? Then why shouldn't the goal in education be the same for you and me? So what he's saying, I'll conclude by saying, what he's saying is that the purpose of our getting our education, and he's speaking primarily of higher education, should be to help the African-American people. Now, how does this tie in with the question? As I say, I believe that Nkrumah went to Howard University. But one thing we know is that within the African-American colleges, these people found a family life, a family, a community. When I was at Tuskegee, we had many African students there that were studying veterinary medicine, and they were accepted. They had their own organization on campus, but they were accepted. They weren't looked at as being unlike the rest of the students, even though often they wore their traditional clothes on special occasions. But generally speaking, you couldn't identify them except that their afros were worn, and that was before the black people started wearing the afros. But they didn't wear the big afros. They had little close-cropped afros, so you could look at them and tell that they were Africans. But other than that, they were part of the general campus community. They were accepted as being part of the black family. So they didn't experience there what they may have experienced at a bigger school or another school that was predominantly white. But the point is that wherever the black students go to school, they do need to feel that they're accepted and that they're at home and get the same kind of support that traditionally they got at the black schools. But again, for those that may be just joining us, this may all be getting ready to change, whether the black school administrators and faculty and students like it or not, just because some of the state governments are looking at the situation and they're saying, for example, why should we pay, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars of presidential salary to two different individuals just so we can have a separate school system for black and white, when we could join these two schools together and pay one president to be over both of these campuses and have a provost making less than $200,000 on one of the campuses, and that way we can save a lot of money. So that's what they're looking at, and we may not like it, but this is what's going on now. So I see that Sister Baena has joined us, and let me repeat for your sake, if you weren't listening, the topic, Sister Baena, is it time for historically black colleges to integrate with predominantly white colleges? If not, why not? And is not full integration what we wanted? And we've heard from Stephanie just a minute ago, and we heard from Dr. Mustafa, and we have another guest that's just listening who hopefully will join us after a while. But that's what we've been talking about. And would you like to give us your opinion? Sister Vaina, did you hear me?
No, I don't want to say anything right now, Vivian. I'm just going to listen for a while.
Well, let me share something with you all. It's about 13 minutes to 9. And in setting up the program this evening, I said that depending on the volume of comments, we would stay after 9 if we needed to, but we would shut down the conversation at 9. And so we've got about 15 minutes to talk. So if you want to say something, please don't hold back on us. Let us hear what you have to say, because otherwise, if we don't have any real back and forth, we'll stop in about 13.
The reason why I don't really have much to say about it is because I see that the world is in transition right now, and I don't really know what norms are anymore. So I have to really think about that question in terms of thinking what is the norm today for historically black colleges and universities. It's a very broad to me. I have to think about that. I can't just really jump in and respond without really thinking about what is normal today. And we're in the 21st century now. We need high tech. We need it's something. We need resources. I think that people should be thinking more global today.
Amen.
But I really have to think about this. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Vaina, thank you so much, Vaina. So, anyone would like to make some comments, please don't wait. Do it now, because otherwise in about 12 minutes the show will be concluded, and we may bring the topic up again in the future. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that don't hold back. If there's something that you would like to say, please go ahead and say it.
Yes, this is Stephanie again. I would really, really like to hear your opinion. What do you think about all of this?
That's a good question, Stephanie, and I'll say this. I believe in the value of historically black colleges because I value of a African-American cultural identity. The Chinese have it here in America. The Haitians have it here in America. The Japanese, Vietnamese, the Chicanos, Mexicans, and South Americans. Everybody has a powerful, unified cultural identity here in America. Of course, we know the Europeans, from the day they first came to America, they sought to maintain their individual nationalistic or cultural identities. The Germans, when they came to Philadelphia, they established Germantown for the benefit of giving Germans an opportunity to feel safe and secure living with other Germans. The Italians, when they settled in New York, they settled in what they call Little Italy. If you went there, you would think you were back in Italy. The signs on the shops were in Italian. The newspapers were in Italian. The policemen were Italian policemen. The people that you met on the street were all Italian people in that section of New York. And that's been the history of America, and it was the history of Black America, except for the fact that we were forced into our neighborhoods. They did it voluntarily. We were pushed into the so-called ghettos or the segregated neighborhoods, and we didn't have the freedom to move out into suburbs where we would be accepted. You know, there's no real history. There may be some incidents, but there's no big history of the Germans as they decided they wanted to move out into the other parts of the city, having you know, people put feces and trash on their yards and saying, you know, Germans get out. That may have happened, but certainly it didn't happen to the extent that it happened almost everywhere where Black people sought to live outside the so-called ghetto. And it was only because of the fact that white people decided that they didn't want to have any Negroes in the neighborhood and started fleeing that a lot of these so-called predominantly white neighborhoods or white neighborhoods turned over to the Black people. My point is this. I like the idea of having Black colleges to feed into a Black society that not only is educating but also employing people. I would have loved personally to have been able to travel to Tuskegee and on some of that vast land, 2,000 acres of land that's owned by Tuskegee, to have seen a carver. I'll just name it, since we know that Dr. Mustafa is definitely promoting his carver telethon, so I'm going to promote it by saying I would have loved to, I won't say his, but our carver telethon, I would have loved to have seen a carver automobile industry at Tuskegee, because it almost happened. It would have happened if Booker T. Washington hadn't been killed or taken off the scene. I say he was killed. We don't have some forensic proof of that, but it's a lot of circumstantial evidence to that effect. Because right down the street from Tuskegee, the Koreans have this big Kia factory. And I'm not sure I could go in there maybe one time when I'm on my way to Tuskegee and ask for a tour. But I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't have a lot of Koreans working in there. They probably have a lot of regular white folks, but I bet they probably have a lot of Negroes working in there. They could have had a majority of Negroes working in the plant at Tuskegee Harbor plant. They could have still employed white people. They could have employed others, but the Black people wouldn't have had to worry about leaving Alabama to go out somewhere in the Midwest or north of Houston to find a job. If they wanted to be a mechanical automotive engineer, they could have stayed right at Tuskegee. But Tuskegee changed its agenda and was no longer interested in building an economic base for Black people, preparing Black to have industries where Black people control the industries, which is tragic because now Tuskegee is sinking financially, because it doesn't have graduates that are making the kind of money as industrial giants that can put a lot of money back into Tuskegee. So to answer your question, even though I'm happy, well, can I just finish one last point?
Okay.
Just one last point. I just want to wrap this up by saying this. You know, I teach at a predominantly white college and also attend classes at this predominantly white college, and in my classroom, you would think you were in the United Nations. You know, we got people from India there. We've got people from South America there. We've got people from the Orient, from China there. We've got African Americans there. We've got Europeans from Europe. White people from Europe, white people from all over America in my classes, and it's a really wonderful environment. Everybody seems to get along fine. We know they're just there to try to get their education, and I don't know who's friends with them. But it's a wonderful, diverse cultural environment. It's definitely uplifting for me to be able to generate friendships and connections with people across these nationalistic and color lines. Now that's a good thing, but on the other hand, for those black students that need to have a sense of identity in a growing movement that will only recognize them if their family group, not necessarily their family, but their national family group, has an identity of being productive and bringing something to the table. See, that's what our people are lacking. When we go for getting these jobs, the people look at their white students and say, the Chinese, their country has donated X millions of dollars to endow scholarships for this university. People are doing research in conjunction with our researchers, but they can tap into research that's being done back in China and bring that to the table. And so those Chinese and these other countries, even though they're diversified with us, they still have that power base from which they came, and that's what the black people are lacking. And I think the black schools can provide that if they were properly oriented towards that mission, which right now, unfortunately, they're not. So to directly answer your question, I think that the black schools should stay. I think we should continue to have these black schools, but I think that they should reassess their mission. That's my answer.
Okay. I agree with you on that, Bernie, ma'am. And I just want to say that the students are more important than what we're voicing our opinions about. And I'm quite sure that they're afraid of being losing their culture because they're feeling that they may be assimilated into the dominant culture and their voice will not be heard anymore. They won't have a, you know, it's like you invest a whole lot of money into a school for black studies. So you have black studies going on your campus. And this is a predominantly white school. But then you have black students who come there and they don't take those black studies courses. So why should I continue to employ a teach Swahili professor to teach Swahili, African history, black studies historian to teach when nobody's taking the classes? And I think that we really have to define what is our culture? What is this culture that you're afraid of not being losing because of your being because of your ability, you have to assimilate to into a larger. It's a struggle. That's why I didn't really want to really respond because I was thinking about my own experiences as a African American going to a predominantly Jewish private university and being ostracized by the black people on campus who were hanging out with me all summer, and because I had a Caucasian roommate who happened to be Jewish, you ostracized me? What did I do? I think that people need to examine themselves and how they're thinking and what culture really means. I was the one walking around campus making all the African outfits, and I was the one that was painting black pictures on the walls and murals and whatever. And once the summer was over and now I have a Caucasian roommate and everybody else has a single room and they're all to themselves. And then the reverse, I don't know. I really have to think about that one because I think very global, and I understand that we need to hold on to what our culture is. Well, our culture really still is still being defined. I think we're still defining what historically black colleges and universities culture really is. What is it? I think we're still in transition. Well, I'm thinking this way. I mean, that's my opinion. But okay, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, well, we're going to wrap up here in a minute. We have got to the end of our comments, but we want to at least reiterate the topic for those that may be joining us, have joined us late on the internet, so that at least you'll be familiar with the topic, and then you can also, those who have joined us on the phone and on the internet, in about 30 minutes you can go up on the archives of Blog Talk Radio, Booker T. Washington Speaks, and you can actually hear this conversation. It's going to be archived. It takes about 20 to 30 minutes after the last, after the show is actually over. So we'll reiterate the topic for those that may have joined us so they'll know what we've talked about. The topic is it time for historically black colleges to integrate with predominantly white colleges? Is it time for historically black colleges to integrate with predominantly white colleges? And if not, why not? And is not full integration what we wanted? So that's the topic for those who missed the beginning of the show. So you can listen to the archives after about 20 or 30 minutes and hear the whole conversation. So before we close, would anyone like to make any closing comments concerning that topic? Okay. So we thank you all for joining us this evening. We hope that you'll have a very good remainder of the weekend. May God continue to bless you. And we're going to close now and say goodnight and close with our traditional closing.